I'm Katie Clark. This is The World. Today and tomorrow, we're listening to Jamaican music. Not new Jamaican music like dancehall, but the old stuff. Reggae, ska, rocksteady, and dub. For many years, that music was the scene in Jamaica, and many around the world loved it, too. And like many scenes, it came to an end. Tomorrow, we'll hear about one place where the musicianship is still alive in Jamaica. Today, The World's Marco Warman tells us about the beginning of the Jamaican scene.
Jamaica's cool musical scene in the 60s and 70s took off thanks to a small piece of technology.
The cheapest thing that they could get was a radio.
That's Paul Miller, better known to music fans as DJ Spooky. He's had a long relationship with Jamaican music, first as a son of parents who went there often when he was a kid in the 70s, and continuing today as someone who's just obsessed with the sound, process, and evolution of Jamaican popular music.
Radio was the first democratic device in the Third World. Once the economies of scale kicked in after World War II, radio really became ubiquitous. So your average person in Jamaica would hear radio coming off the coast of Florida and then want to hear a live version of that. So the bands responded by doing cover versions, and those would be played at parties.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away.
What ends up happening is you get a certain saturation, because if everybody can hear those same songs, what you need to do is innovate to come up with a new style or a new technique. And so that's where you get this kind of arms race of competition going on. And because of that arms race, people had to come up with new styles literally every couple days. And if one rhythm became popular, everybody would get copies of it, and then what really made it go off the scale was adding a live human element and somebody chatting over the record. And that's where you get people like Michigan and Smiley in the later stages, or on some of the early stuff would be, of course, Dillinger.
Say my daddy was a great old man, and so he died with a shovel in his hand.
Artists like Dillinger were originally called Sing Jays. They did their chanting over rhythms that had been dubbed sometimes three or four times or more. The purveyor of those dub tracks was a sound engineer named King Tubby. As DJ Spooky explains, King Tubby knew how to make the most of the island's limited resources.
Back in that time period, even multi-tracking was a really complex situation, and a lot of the early Jamaican analog tapes were two-track. What would happen is musicians would come into the studio, they'd record on two tracks, and then try and do what they call dub edits, which is you would transfer and copy those two tracks that somebody had played, then layer them with another two tracks, and that's how you'd get this kind of layering going on. So a lot of musicians, to spice up their tracks, would take them to King Tubby. He became the first remixer, really. So he would take those layered tapes and do what they call kind of like synchronizing. And that's where you can take the voice out or have a faint echo of it. And this is all done by hand. The technical innovation was usually just very crude. Small tape machines, reel-to-reel, that kind of thing. It's hard for us right now to go back and think about how much beautiful music came out of these small and like patchwork studios.
Today's dancehall tracks are made on home computer systems, so those old studios are not exactly thriving anymore. I dropped by the famous Studio One when I was in Kingston. I couldn't make an appointment. Studio One's number isn't even in the phone book. It's still on the same street, now called Studio One Boulevard, but the building is surrounded by concertina wire and not much was going on there. So I went by another studio, Sonic Sounds. It was also quiet, but in the courtyard was a legend, Noel Sims Scully.
My right name is Noel Bartholomew Sims, the first recording artist in Jamaica.
And when you say first, what does that mean? You recorded the very first vinyl in this country?
The very first vinyl in this country, apart from Calypso. Quarter-inch tape we recorded on. We had it the hardest way. Because if the singer make a mistake while recording the song, he has to start all over. If the bass player make a mistake, we have to start all over. If the drummer make a mistake, any one of the musicians make a mistake while recording, we have to start the song from the top to the very last drop.
The process was the same in all the studios, regardless of the style. Reggae, ska, rocksteady, what have you, even jazz. This song is called The Russians Are Coming, Take 5. It's unclear if composer Paul Desmond ever saw royalties from this version. Some would say the Jamaican artists were inspired by Dave Brubeck's version of Take 5. Some would say they copied it, even pirated it. Still, it shows that Jamaican musicians ate up everything they heard on those little radios. Russians Are Coming, Take 5, is on a recording Paul Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, compiled last year. Like a kid let loose in a candy shop, he was given the keys to the vaults of Trojan Records, one of the great Jamaican labels of the period. And what he heard in those Trojan vaults made him realize that Jamaica remains the template for what he and many of his remixer-producer colleagues do now. Only today, a different technology has replaced the transistor radio.
Now, of course, we have the internet and mashups and all this kind of crazy online editing. There's people like Danger Mouse or myself, DJ Shadow, you name it. We're all, children of that kind of process. It all goes back to that Jamaican minimalism. And the cool thing is that it's also very multicultural. Strangely enough, Trojan Records was started by Lee Guptal, an Indian, with a white Jamaican, Chris Blackwell. And one of Bob Marley's first producers was Leslie Call, who's Chinese. Chinese Jamaican. But it's all about the way independence came about, which is you had people with very specific skill sets that had been all of a sudden cut off from this normal economic routine of the British Empire. People are put in a situation where music and creativity are become valued because that's how... If same thing happened in the Depression in the U.S., where a lot of people were thrown out of jobs and music became more important than ever. Similar kind of thing. But in such a small place, everybody started wanting to hear really intense innovation because that's what made their clubs or their parties more interesting. And they just happened to be really irreverent towards normal copyright law.
Maybe today's sensitivity to copyright laws won't allow a repeat of that scene. But one wonders, with all the tumult in the world today, when and where the next creative scene is going to explode, just like it did in Jamaica in the 1960s. For The World, I'm Marco Werman.
Tomorrow, Marco Werman takes us to the Alpha Boys School, where Jamaica's music tradition lives on. From the Nan and Bill Harris Studios at WGBH, I'm Katie Clark. Thanks for listening.